Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island-chained paradise, with the really weird direction in the flushing of the toilets. And my very special guest is Peter Kling. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Vinny. How are you today?
Yeah, somewhat fabulous is my standard response.
Well, that's great.
Actually, technically, it's fabulous. And I would love it if you'd just kind of introduce yourself to the audience, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Oh, that's the part I hate the most. But anyway, I'll do that. I wrote a book. I'm an author, but I didn't start out that way by any means. Writing a book was the last thing I thought I was going to wind up doing. But I have had kind of an interesting life, one which if I ever wrote an autobiography about myself, nobody would ever believe, so we won't go into too much detail, but it was unusual to say the least. As a matter of fact, to make any sort of sense out of my life, I've had to go back generations, and thanks to work that my cousin did, I find that I have generations that have been doing this for years, so my life started out very interestingly. I was born like every other child, normally, for the most part. But what was different is that when I got to about the age of 4 and a half, I started being taught biblical prophecy and biblical history. And pretty much by the time I was 5, 5 and a half, certainly by the age I was 6, I understood the complete story of the Bible. Now, not every chapter and every detail, you know, every little detail, but I understood the general story of the Bible. How we were put here by God or Yahweh, and how there are extra dimensional life forms involved in us being here, and that they've watched over us, and that they've been with us, and some have rebelled and have enslaved us. It's all written out in a very interesting book, which most people are now discrediting. The church, though, interestingly enough, has never told the truth about the Bible. And I'm going to give you a different paradigm about the Bible, because I didn't learn the Bible. I didn't learn religion. I learned exopolitics, the political affairs between humans and interdimensionals within this multiverse that we live. And yes, I said multiverse. According to the mathematics, in order for our three-dimensional Earth to be here, our three-dimensional universe, there needs to be at least 7 other dimensions to support it. Now, the interesting thing about the mathematics is that the other 7 dimensions can do just fine without us. They don't need us. And this is string theory. And this is where it all comes back to, is who God is or what God is. Because in string theory lies the God particle, and that's why they've built this huge piece of equipment, the CERN Hadron Collider, or the Hadron Collider at CERN, and they believe they found the God particle. Pure dynamic energy.
I had a joke about that. I interviewed Miran Tavakoli, and he said that what the God particle is, it's actually just the same kind of particle that we have inside every human body. So they spent $8 billion possibly risking the creation of a black hole and to destroy the Earth in order to find a new type of matter. But the type of matter that they found appeared for a second and then disappeared and had no practical benefit. I called it doesn't matter.
Ah, but it does matter. And you know, that's probably the best place to start is right with the God particle. You know, if you're going to tell a story, go right to the beginning. My own personal story, though, is that I learned the scriptures from a different viewpoint, from one that was separate from religion. I didn't learn religion. I learned that other religions existed, and, you know, what they worshipped wasn't right. I also learned or was told from a very early age not to get involved in politics here on Earth. And I'll explain why a little bit later. So I had this very early, interesting concept different than what most children grow up with. As a matter of fact, by the time I was 7 years old, I had a pretty well complete understanding of the interdimensional beings, right down to the poltergeists and demons that we have among us. And I can also pretty much tell you how to protect yourself from them. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. At the age of 9, I had something which happened which caused a paradox in my life. And this is where all of a sudden two different worlds came to be. By the age of 9, I'd already had 5 years of biblical education and knowledge of biblical history, biblical prophecy. I understood that there were interdimensional life forms involved. I didn't quite have an understanding of exactly what heaven was, but I knew that there were other dimensions beyond the three that we lived in, that we considered the fourth dimension back at that period of history, time. But we know that there needs to be at least seven other dimensions besides the dimension of time. The dimension of time is a variable dimension across all dimensions. Interestingly enough, we have a variable dimension of time even upon the planet. If you traveled at the speed of light and traveled out to Alpha Centauri and came back, that you would have aged 4.4 years, and time on Earth would have continued at normal time. Your children would be dead, and your grandchildren would be old people. But you will have only aged 4.5 years. So conventional space travel, even at the speed of light, is impractical. Totally impractical. Because by the time you accomplished your mission, think of the technology that has changed in the past 100 years. And you jump forward, you know, you say, well, I'm going to take a quick trip. You're back in 4.4 light years. And when you come back, what you find is it's about 100 years later here on Earth. So, you know, nothing happens. We sit here on Earth thinking, you know, when's he going to be back? When's he going to be back? When's he going to be back? Well, the universe does not run on Earth time, and the cosmos does not run on universal time. As a matter of fact, the time in the cosmos is calculated as 1,000 Earth years equals one day within the multiverse.
So that would make light travel pretty much an instantaneous affair if you're traveling through the universe, isn't it?
Now, you know, the interesting thing, I'll tell you what's fantastic. The theory is, of course, they can't quite prove this yet, but the theory is that thought is instantaneous. It can span the entire universe in an instant. Not only can it span the entire universe, but it can span the multiverse in an instant. Oh, wow, what a great way to travel.
Well, that reminds me of something David Icke said. He was looking at the DNA strands, and you know when you got those aerials on your car just for the radio and everything, it's got like a coiled aerial and little things up the top. He said that's exactly what our DNA looks like. It's a transmitter or a receiver.
Oh. Well, you know what? We'll get into this a little bit more, but they're finding more about the DNA. You know, all that junk DNA that's it's useless DNA. What they're finding out now is that our DNA contains the DNA of the entire planet.
Or locked in with infinite genetic knowledge, like on the fifth element, no?
Yeah, in our own DNA. And guess what happened? It's junk DNA. We don't know what it does. Somebody ripped it apart. Yeah, I wonder how that happened. You know, there's a story about some people that were first put on this planet who had perfect DNA and ate this fruit with a virus that destroyed their DNA. But that's just hearsay. But, you know, that's a good – we're going to get to that in a minute. Let's go back to when I was 9 years old, this paradox that forms. I literally had a dream that came true. And when it happened, I dreamt it, and about 10 days later, it came true. And when I lived through the experience, I was a terrified little kid. And when it was over, I ran home, and I remember running up the stairs and running into our flat or apartment there. And my mom's washing the dishes, and I said, Ma, I just had a dream that came true. And she's washing her dishes, didn't miss a beat, said, that's nice, honey, it's time for you to go to bed now. And I'm like, what? You know, my old mother just cut me off. Where in the world was I going to find the answer to this? And so I turned to science. At 10 years old, I started studying chemistry. It became my vocation in life. And so I literally grew up with a test tube in one hand and a Bible in the other. Thinking, why don't these two meet? And finally, one day, I was in my mid-20s, I was working in the laboratory. I was reading the book of Job. And I came across an interesting verse. You know, I was contemplating. I had learned to meditate, and I had learned metaphysics by the time I was 22 years old, and that opened up a lot of doors. You know, people are fascinated by quantum physics. Learn metaphysics. It's like surfing the multiverse. It's fantastic. Because that's where it all starts to open up. And it's a science that we can't prove because our science isn't advanced far enough. As a matter of fact, our science wasn't advanced far enough to even start to understand the scriptures until the late 1950s. So here, one day in the laboratory, I'm reading the book of Job, and I'm thinking, you know what? If the Bible is written for the generation that has to go through Armageddon, if they're the target audience, considering the Bible ends with Revelation, and it goes on, and it says that this paradigm ends and a new paradigm begins. This paradigm is destroyed. Now, when you look around the world today, how much do you really want to save? You know, what part of industry, the banking complex, what part of new technology like HARP? It really is a new technology. But, you know, maybe we should save the nuclear industry. That would be a good one to save. And we can find out what happens to Fukushima in another 40 years. You know, see if we have any more of those things go off or see if they can fix that. Because they don't have the technology, they will not have the technology to fix Fukushima for 35 years is what they said the week that it went off. They said, we don't even have the technology to begin to fix this.
Well, they're probably just saying that because they didn't want to tell everybody that it's actually going to be like 20, 30,000 years before we got the technology to fix it. And by then, everybody will be dead. So why matter?
Well, you see, that's the great thing about the 2045 initiative. I don't know if you've looked into this or any of your listeners have, but if you haven't, go Google it. The 2045 initiative, it's the transhuman initiative. They know they can't stop Fukushima. They got to come up with a way to keep on going. And so the end game plan is to develop nanobot technology to the point where they could replace biological humans with humans who are made of nanobots. So essentially, the 2045 initiative is the end of biological human life on this planet. Yeah, there's your deadline.
How interesting. And because the Elite have been trying to do this. It's one of their end games. I mean, like, if you were a complete psychopathic control freak, what's the last thing that you fear? And what's the only thing that you really, really want to prevent on a consistent basis? Death.
And, you know, this is something that the Dalai Lama himself has endorsed.
Well, didn't the Dalai Lama have slaves?
Yeah, I really don't know because I don't follow religion. You know, here's why. Because you get to Revelation, the 17th and 18th chapter, and religion as we know it is destroyed. So why bother following something that's going to be destroyed?
Hmm. Well, it wouldn't have stopped people. In fact, people have done this before throughout history, haven't they? They're just like, hey, this sounds like a really brilliant idea, but bro, it's going to exterminate us. It's going to completely enslave us and everything. Yeah, but the guy tells us it's a good idea. Let's just follow him blindly and not question it.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, when I was writing Letters to Earth, I was like, okay, where did this all start? And actually, I had an inkling of it before, but I needed to get the story so I could get it down in writing. And I, in doing my research, I never just look for one source. I like to find at least three and at least two before I'll say, yep, okay, now we've got support for the finding. And sometimes, you know, you got to look at the logical answer yourself in what's going on. But the main thing is feel what's going on, because if you can feel it, you'll know it before it gets to you. You know, it reminds me
of something I actually got told by a friend of mine. I wanted to quit my job once, and I asked him, you know, what should I do? And he goes, does it feel right? It's like, well, yes, it did. And quitting that job turned me into this radio show host that I am today. So, yeah, it felt very right, and it still does.
There you go. You know, here's the thing. And this takes us into the multidimensional universe. How many times have you turned around and said, I knew that was going to happen?
It actually happens to me like almost on a daily basis, and sometimes like my brain will tell me things, and yeah, Vinny do that, and I'll go and like, let's not do it and just see what happens. And exactly what I thought would happen if I didn't do something exactly does happen.
So go listen to yourself. Then. Yeah, obvious.
Oh yeah, exactly. I was just testing. You know, I was just testing. I remember this one time actually, Peter. I was at my wife's friend's wedding, and for some reason the song came into my head. You know, Electric Avenue.
We got to bust down to Electric Avenue.
Have you heard that song before? No.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, I was just humming it in my head, and I don't know why the hell it was in my head. And I got in my car, turned on the radio. I didn't even touch the dial or anything, but there it was.
We got to bust down to Electric Avenue.
And I was like, whoa. I'm starting to actually predict radio and television and even movies, in fact. I think... what was it, last year or might have been the year before, there's a film called Dredd, about Judge Dredd that came out in the cinemas.
Yeah.
And about a week before it was announced, I was like, Judge Dredd's going to be coming out again. And so I watched the old Judge Dredd, the one with Sylvester Stallone made in 2005. And then, watching the TV, here comes a new ad for a new Judge Dredd movie. It's like, I knew that was going to happen. Why? How does this happen? And more to the point, how the hell can I actually derive practical benefit? Because you can't actually, like, there's no practical benefit in knowing that Electric Avenue is playing.
You're 100% correct, but it goes to show you that you can tune in to virtually anything, not just anything, but anything in any time, forward or backward in history, any place across the multiverse, as long as you know where to go look. You know, if you walk into a library and you want to go find a book, probably now you go to a computer, you type in the name of the book, they give you the reference number to go where to go look, then you take that well, however many digit reference number they give you, the Dewey Decimal System, and you go track down the aisle and the row and the shelf and the area where that book should be located. Now, without having that little roadmap to where that information would be, how long would it take you just to walk into the library, walk right to that place where that book would be located and say, "This, yep, that's it," and walk right back out?
Einstein did that to somebody once. There was a group of students hanging around him at a university one day, and one of them asked him a question. And he goes, "Okay, well, I'll get you the answer to the question." So he walks down the aisles of books. He's just dragging his fingers along both sides of the aisles of the books, and he picks one, goes to a particular page, and then pops it down in front of the student. He goes, "Read that. That's the answer to your question." He just did it totally randomly, and it was the answer to his question.
Yeah, well, you know, you see, Einstein did something, and he was a master at it. You see, he knew how to meditate. He pondered and he saw the outcome, and that's how he saw the end result. And so then he would work backwards from the end result and come up with his equation. That's why I said God doesn't throw dice with the universe. It's not a game of chance.
Yeah.
That's why fractal technology works. That's why sacred geometry works. That's why all these things are together. Now, here we've got all of this stuff that, boy, you know, could you imagine if they taught this stuff in school? The brilliant minds that we could turn out. Oh, my goodness.
The students would stop listening to the teachers, though, and the schools wouldn't exist anymore. How bad would that be?
Well, no, you see, if the teachers knew enough to teach this stuff in schools, I can guarantee you in one generation the paradigm of this earth could be changed.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that other element as well, is the reason why people don't listen to their teachers is because their teachers don't know what they're talking about.
Well, you see, that's the problem. You can't put a turkey in front of a bunch of kids and expect the kids to learn how to gobble. Okay. Now, you can have somebody who knows how to work a turkey call teach a bunch of kids to learn how to gobble, but unless those kids can figure out how to make the little toy or how to get those mouth movements or those throat movements to work just right, they ain't going to learn anything from that turkey. So why put a turkey in front of the school system? You know, here's a fact. I just read this poll that just earlier this week. 25% of Americans believe that the sun revolves around the earth. And you wonder why we're in the trouble that we're in on this planet.
And about 50% don't know what evolution is.
And you know, evolution's a crock of crap anyway.
Oh yeah, but they don't even know. But they don't even know what the explanation of the crap is. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, you know, you ask them what year the War of 1812 was for, they'll say, "I don't know."
Oh, yeah, it's like jaywalking. Jay Leno did this all the time in New York. He's going around asking people simple questions like, "Who's the current president of the United States?" Richard Nixon? You know, just freaking retarded.
The first part of my professional life, I worked in the laboratory. And, you know, I eventually got tired of dealing with chemicals and formulas and said, people are more interesting. And oddly enough, I went from something that was very introverted and forced myself into something that was very extroverted. I got into sales and marketing in telecommunications. And I spent actually more than 15 years in that industry. So I got to meet a lot of people, talk to a lot of people, and interact with a lot of people along the way. And I was still able to carry on my research. See, I forgot where I was going exactly with that one, but it brings us to a point to a lot of different points when you look at the telecommunications industry in itself or communications.
Yeah, that's where I used to work as well.
It's dealing with other people, but it's also, you know, what one of the reasons I liked it is I pretty much was able to do what I want, and you know what, I could see my outcome. And I was able to learn and apply different rules within metaphysics that I had learned along the way from the scientific aspect, it was now being applied in my everyday life. But the interesting thing was, metaphysics opened up the doors for me. I didn't just have one dream that came true. Actually, it never stopped. I was able to see and still can see future events. It's been part of my life all the way through my life. Back in 2002, the year 2000, I was trading commodities and my broker asked me, who do you like for president? And I said, who do I like or who do I think is going to be the next president? He said, well, both. Now, I don't get involved in politics. I just don't. I was told not to,
Not Earth-based politics, anyway.
Not exopolitics. Yeah, I take sides there. exopolitics just depends. Exopolitics it is what has brought Earth politics to fruition, because it was the Anunnaki that gave the Sumerians. Remember Sumeria, the cradle of civilization. It was the Anunnaki that gave them the idea or the instructions for both government and religion. Yeah. And we've been saddled with that crap ever since.
Well, apparently those discoveries in ancient Sumeria happened kind of like overnight, and then they disappeared overnight just as quickly.
Well, you remember the Iraqi war? Not the first one, the second one, when we went into Baghdad and all of a sudden all of the museums were looted.
Yeah, yeah, they tried to cover up all the evidence of the ancient world and what have you, because, look, if everybody knew how history really transpired and what have you, and they had artifacts to prove the such, almost every single institution would be revolted against, don't you think? Because they've just been lying to us this whole freaking time.
Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Religion's been lying to us right from the beginning. Religion has lied to us about the information in the Bible, and I can prove that every religion, which is Christian or Judaism, Jewish-based, and this may even stretch over into Islam to some extent, has been lying to you, but I know Islam has been lying to you anyway because they all came from the same group. And here is the proof. And the proof is found right in the scriptures themselves. You go to Genesis, the second chapter, and start reading at the 21st verse. It says, and I'll paraphrase this, I'll quote it the best that I can, and God said that it's not good for the man to be alone. So I'm going to create a helper for him. So he causes a sleep to come over the man. He opens the flesh, he removes a rib, closes the flesh, sends the rib down to genetic engineering with a note saying, can you please bioengineer a female from this genetic sample? Genetic engineering turns around and says, yep, okay. They turn around. They change the Y chromosome now for an X chromosome. They flip a couple switches on the DNA. So the different hormones kick in at different rates. They put it in the shake and bake, and a couple of months later, out comes a fully grown adult female, and they bring her before Adam. And Adam says, at last, this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. This one was taken from man. I will call her woman. Yeah, she's my sister and she's my clone. And Adam understood it. Adam understood that that they used his genetic information. And that's why he also mentioned the rib, because he knew what part was taken. The flesh of his flesh and the bone of his bones, that genetic information was used to recreate a female version of Adam, and essentially Eve was Adam's cloned twin sister. Ooh, incest. No, it's not incest. It's the seeding of the first human couple on the face of the planet. There wasn't anybody that existed before. And they both had perfect DNA. They both had absolutely perfect DNA, but they had something more. They had something that no other creation on this planet had. You see, when you look at how Adam was made, he was actually made out of the elements, out of the actual elements of the ground. And then it says God breathed the breath of life into him. God put the soul into the body, which was formed based on previous genetic references, which we could find in the fossil record. Pretty much the final last model, which was used for modern humans, was Cro-Magnon man. And pretty much after what happened to our DNA, we're back to Cro-Magnon man status. We die. But when we had what the original copy had perfect DNA, and that DNA would have replicated itself perfectly indefinitely. Now, here's the interesting thing. When you read this account, God didn't, according to the Bible, they didn't make two bodies out of the elements. They only made one body because that's all they needed. Now, here's the real question. Who are the genetic engineers? And why do the churches, or why does religion tell you that the creation of woman is a holy mystery? Yeah. You see, they've been lying to you. Oh, well, it's a holy mystery of God. We don't know the answer to that question. Now, here's the interesting thing.
It's we kind could, of like a bank robber or something like that. You go up to him and you go, bro, where's all the money? And he goes, it's a mystery.
What money? Yeah, why don't you guys get a TV crew in here and you can do the next crime drama and figure it out? You know, yeah, it's like, what's going on? And you see, because we don't have that perfect DNA, the story gets lost along the way. It's, you know, it's like the old game of, well, we call it telephone here in the United States. You get a bunch of people lined up together, and you have one person gives a message to the first person, and then they turn around and give that message, the same message to the next person, and so forth and so on, all the way down the line. And you find out, and then you go see what message you got at the end.
Chinese whispers.
Okay.
That's what we call it.
That's what it is down under. So that's why I described it. If you guys are up here, everybody would know. So, but you know, you have that game. And by the time you get to the end, the story's changing. And that's what they say about the Bible. Oh, the story's changed. No, wait a minute. You see, the biblical scholars who study the Dead Sea Scrolls, and this is a very closed society. You want to talk about some privately held information. There is a lot more to the Dead Sea Scrolls than are actually being released. But what has been released, when it's compared to the scriptures from a modern Bible today, the scholars say that there is extremely little difference. That the differences that they found were either minor grammatical differences or spelling errors. So when you look at something that was written 2,000 years ago and you say, okay, well, what did it get turned into today? And you look at it today and it's like, wait a minute. It's the same message. So now I ask again, the message hasn't changed. But who are the genetic engineers? Now, here's the curious thing. We couldn't have even asked that question until our science had developed far enough along to realize that DNA could be genetically manipulated, that DNA could be engineered. And now there's a whole technology based around engineering, bioengineering DNA, vegetable DNA, animal DNA, human DNA, mix and match them all together. They actually didn't have this knowledge until the late 1960s. So you could never understand what was written in Genesis 22, 21 through 23 until after 1960, or at least toward the end of the 1960s, when you could understand what genetic engineering was, and that's exactly what happened there in that account. Now, here's another interesting thing. Yeah. You look at the fossil record of Earth, And all of us, basically, nothing happens on this planet for about 3 billion years. And then you get the Precambrian period, which for about a billion years, all we have is single-cell bacteria, mostly cyanobacteria, growing and populating and inhabiting the oceans of the ancient primordial oceans. And after a billion years, about the most sophisticated thing we have are phytoplankton, zooplankton, and some simple jellyfish, but they're not sure about the jellyfish because jellyfish don't leave much of a fossil. And then all of a sudden, literally, geologically speaking, overnight, there is so much DNA dumped on this planet that there has never been such an amount of DNA on this planet since. There have only been reduced numbers of genetic information on this planet. It would be easier to explain. Picture this. 1600s. You're sitting in the middle of the woods in what is now Central Park, and you're camped out with your family. You're one of the local Native Americans there, and you all cuddle in for the night and you go to sleep. And when you wake up the next morning, Manhattan is built around you. Skyscrapers, hotels, everybody's there. It's all built around you. It would be easier to explain how that could happen than how all that genetic information just spontaneously appeared. Scientists don't have a clue. They say, oh, well, the oxygen level's at 21-23%, and life just happened. Yeah, life just happened to the extent that it's never happened. We've never had so much life on this planet since.
What is it about the scientific profession that makes them only look at evidence, but not actually do any thinking? I don't get it. I mean,
educated ignorance.
Ignorance. See, there has to be a way of splicing those words together. Something between education and ignorance. I'll come up with it in a minute. But anyway, sorry. Continue.
Well, that's basically what it is. What academia has become today is what the church was 1,000 years ago. Oh, you got to prove that. You're saying something different than what we've told you? You're going to burn in hell. Let's burn him at the stake. You know, that's the level that academia has been reduced to. Now, interestingly enough, you look at my ancestry, and my ancestry was some of those people that were burned at the stake. On my father's side, my ancestors were Huguenots, and they, because of religious persecution in the late 1600s or early 1700s, they fled France and went to Germany. But when you look at the history of the Huguenots, they were among the first people to protest in what the church was teaching, and what started the protest? A priest translated the Bible into the local dialect of French, and the local people were able to read it. And that's when the church started burning people at the stake, because people were finding out the truth and they were criticizing the church. And the church has lied to us ever since they came into existence. Funny how that happens.
Which makes one believe that they
and
came
I'm not
into
a Huguenot.
yeah, but they came into existence for that very reason, I suspect.
Well, when you go back and look at it, okay, let's look for some more scientific evidence. Now here's my explanation. The only way you can logically explain how that much DNA material gets here on this planet is through extraterrestrial or interdimensional means. There is no other real explanation. You don't just have a city pop up overnight. You just don't. I don't know if you folks have them down under, but here in America, we have what we call a pill bug. And you usually find these things in damp, dark places, you know, sometimes under some rotten wood, or, you know, they'll make their home in the bottom of your wet basement. And they just look like a brown segmented beetle. They look like a really tiny millipede, you know, only about a half inch long. And we call them pill bugs or sow bugs or potato beetles. Those are common names for them here in the United States. Well, once upon a time, back in the Cambrian era, there were over 17,000 different kinds of those things, and they all lived in the ocean. Now there's only one. From over 17,000 different kinds down to our last variety. How about that? Talk about extinction level events. And yet that's what we're facing with Fukushima, is an extinction level event.
Yeah. I was listening to Dr. Jonathan Gray. He's an archaeologist from New Zealand, and he went out to the Ararat mountain ranges just outside Syria and kind of very close to the border with Turkey. And they found frickin' Noah's Ark, bro. It was 500 cubits in length. It had five decks, and it had titanium rivets holding it together. And all the wood was fossilized and everything like that. Boats sitting on top of the frickin' mountain. And they're
what kind of rivets?
Titanium.
Ah, now here's an interesting thing. You know, the world was supposed to end, according to the media. May I clarify?
There were actually something like nine elements, including titanium, within those rivets. So there was some pretty advanced metallurgy going on, and we've only been able to work with titanium in the last 60, 70 years or something.
Yeah, and I want to point this out. Because you opened up a little Pandora's box here. Where'd they get that technology from? Where did they get the technology for that metallurgy?
Well, in the Bible, it said before the Great Flood, I think it was like they had an industrial revolution about 200 years or 300 years before the Great Flood kind of thing. Not entirely dissimilar to today. I operate under the belief that there was once a very technologically advanced global society, and it just got totally wiped out, and most records of it went with it.
You know, I started to mention media has told us that, the world was going to come to an end December 21st, 2012. It was supposed to be the end of the Mayan long count calendar, the Long Baktun, which is 5,125 years. Now, if you go back in history, 5,125 years, it puts you at the same time as the recordings of the events in the Book of Enoch. Now, the Book of Enoch records that we had an alien invasion. As is recorded in the Book of Enoch, the Watchers invaded Earth. And he actually names the top 20 of them, but there was over 200 that were involved, at least in the book. And the Bible doesn't say much about this. The Bible says that the daughters, that men grew in numbers on the face of the earth, and the sons of God saw that earth women were hot, and so they came taking wives for themselves, all whom they chose, and the women were giving birth to this hybrid, half interdimensional, half human. Now, what do you mean interdimensional? A life form that has the capability of going from one set of dimensions, like our three-dimensional world here, into another set of dimensions at will, instantaneously. Not only can they change dimensions instantaneously at will, but they can also materialize into, obviously, our genetic form. Now, people say, well, how is this possible? Or people say, that's impossible. No, it's not impossible. They are formed out of a different type of energy than we are. Exactly what energy? I believe it's more along a crystalline energy as opposed to a biological energy. We're down to the atomic structure. When you want to get technical, everything works on atomic structure. And so what we're made up of is mostly little bits and pieces of carbon atoms and hydrogen atoms, oxygen atoms, and so forth and so on. I guess on the open market with inflation, maybe chemically we're worth about $3, $4, depending on the exchange rate. But you know, we are a total different base, and we're biological. We're carbon-based biological. These are energy-based crystalline, different structure. And they can change, they have the ability to change their energy. In other words, hey, you want to sit there and look like a rock? I'll be a rock for this afternoon. You want to be look like a human? I'll be a human this afternoon. They can change the energy right down to the atomic structure, so they can control their energy down to our atomic structure. And hence, they were able to produce sperm just like human men could. Or do. Supposed to, anyway. And so here they procreate with women, and they create this hybrid offspring called the Nephilim. Now, keep in mind, this is going on at the beginning of the last long count Bakhtun that the Mayans use as their calendar. These are the events of the Book of Enoch. And what happens is, evidently, we get some insight into this through Greek mythology. The story of Zeus and Hercules, Hercules' mother was a mortal woman. When you go deeper into that story, he's got over 100 brothers, all fathered by Zeus, all with different mortal women. So, you know, there might be a little bit more to mythology than what we think is myth. There's a reason why, you know, it's interesting. There's
that reminds me of the start of Lord of the Rings, when they give the preface and the big battle in the beginning, and then everybody forgets about it, and history became legend, legend became myth.
Well, you see, exactly, and how many people around the world say, "Ah, the Bible's a myth"? Wait a minute, no. Religion is a myth. The Bible is a exopolitical record of 6,000 years of alien involvement in human history, or interdimensional involvement in human history. Either way, it's extraterrestrial. They're not from Earth, nor are they from this dimension. Not originally, anyway. Now, people are saying, oh, what about, you know, the races from different locations, whether it may be the Pleiades or anywhere across the galaxy, the Greys, the Aryans, the Reptilians, all of these three-dimensional alien races, which we actually have nothing to go by but some chiseled carvings in stone and some ancient paintings. And if these things could shape into any form that they want, you know, it doesn't take a big stretch of the imagination that they could show up as giant gods if they wanted, or smaller versions or whatever. They could show up in spaceships. Like, they don't have the technology. They bioengineered life on Earth, more than likely. So, you know, we can't throw anything out of the box, so to speak. We have to stand on the outside of the box and look in. You know, some things we can throw out, like, okay, was the Earth made in 6 days? Heck no. Where did religion come up with that idea? Throw that one out of the box. Did man evolve? Most likely not. Not if there's a possibility that we were genetically engineered. Because when you look at the fossil record, that's what it would show, is that different species of Homo sapien have been on this planet for a very long time. It was just a matter of choosing a copy which was most environmentally friendly for the time of the creation of the first perfect DNA human couple and seed the planet. Now, you have to look for some intelligent backing for this. You know, what would be the purpose? Well, we have a really, really big universe. As a matter of fact, they now believe that there's well over a trillion Earth-like planets. Nice. Room for expansion. You got to start somewhere. And you see, here's the thing. We all think in Earth years. A good percentage of the people in the United States still think that the sun revolves around the Earth. But, you know, once upon a time, people believed the Earth was flat. And it's not, obviously.
Have you ever noticed that this is kind of like the lesson of history? One guy's right and everybody else and the entire frickin' planet is full of crap?
You know, I hate to say that, but yeah. And it's not that I'm so great. It's that I've studied this for so long and I've had good information to look at it. And I can look at it scientifically and logically. And then I use the metaphysical side. And this is what's neat about metaphysics. You see, and boy, before I get into this, let's continue with the alien subject here, or the extraterrestrial subject. So here we have this record of interdimensionals. Remember how we got to this was with Noah's Ark and the metallurgy. When we look at the record that is in the Book of Enoch, one of the things that they taught the humans was how to work metal. They gave us the technology of metallurgy, and they also showed us how to make knives, spears, swords, armor. Nice. So we can protect ourselves from the Nephilim. Cool.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, ladies and gentlemen, metallurgy is not an allergy to metals, okay?
Yes.
I thought I'd throw that in there. I thought that was cool.
Some people may develop them. I don't know. Let's see. But you know,
technically,
and now,
I'm allergic to mercury. Am I metallurgic?
Well, I guess. Yeah, I guess we would all be mercury metallurgic. It's kind of deadly to humans.
Yeah. Maybe I could get some kind of a toxic mercury-containing vaccine to prevent me from the mercury, eh? That sounds like something the medical profession would recommend.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's soon to be our spring. You folks are going down into the autumn months now. But we're headed into the spring, and so I like to fish, and I didn't get a chance to fish this past season. I decided I'm going to spend some time fishing this year. And so I got a local fishing laws pamphlet and started reviewing the laws on, you know, getting ready for the season. And I was looking at the different species of fish, and you know what? There is a prescribed amount of fish to eat, and the reason why you should only eat that prescribed amount, and it's because most of it is – well, no, there's two contaminants, PCB, polybiphenyl chloro, PCBs, polybiphenyl, gee, I forget what the last one, the last chemical element is, but it's a plastic that settles right down to the bottom of the water. It's made.
It's not BPA, bisphenyl alanine, is it?
No. It's a... they had a whole problem with this years ago with General Electric dumping all this stuff in that wound up in the Hudson River, and they use it in insulation for – or they used to use it in insulation for transformers. But anyway, it's either that contaminant –
I don't think we really need to go into it and explain what it is. I mean, how many people know what the word – what the letters DNA stand for, you know? Nobody does, so bugger it.
But the other contaminant is mercury. Mercury, you should only eat so many and if you're a pregnant woman, you shouldn't eat the fish at all. Isn't that sad? What a state of affairs this planet has gotten into where you can't even go down to the local pond and catch a fish and eat it. Or if you do, you can only eat one a month because if you eat any more than that, it might kill you.
I saw a hilarious picture on Facebook the other day. It's a dude with a top hat with his hands out, you know, that kind of, well, you know, sort of position. And he says, look, I'm not saying that we kill all the stupid people. Let's just remove the warning labels off of everything and let the problem sort itself out.
Oh, you were saying it. I was thinking it. That's fantastic. Myself and my kids have this conversation over and over again about stupid people. Yeah. I said and I identified that years ago. I said, the problem is that they started putting warning labels on everything. You know, as a kid, I used to make some extra money by cutting lawns. And I knew enough. My dad told me, don't stick your hand underneath there if you want to keep your fingers. Now, if you're a kid, that would probably be a good thing to know. And if you're an adult, you would pretty much take for granted that you should already have enough intelligence to realize that if you stick your fingers underneath a machine that's got a rotating blade that's traveling at probably well over 200 miles an hour, you're going to lose a few fingers. But no.
I've got some bad news for you. My wife's friend married a lawyer, and he was mowing his lawn, and he had to like get his lawnmower up a rise, like a step kind of thing. So while the lawnmower was still running, he tried to pick it up from underneath.
Yeah, you know, and he's an attorney, so there you go.
Yeah.
It's just... You know, all you have to do is take the warning labels off. But you know, here's the other side of the coin, and this one's real, is that all you have to do is shut off the electric, like with an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, which could be caused by a nuclear device or by a solar blast or by possibly a Nibiru type event where we might have a brown dwarf star passing between us and the sun. Brown dwarf star is basically an iron star. You want to talk about something that's going to be electrically charged? Look out and hold on. Now, we had a scandal going on here in the United States, and most people weren't even aware of it. If you were awake on the internet or friend on my Facebook page, you probably were well aware of it. And that is that back in the summer, there was an earthquake off the coast of South Carolina. And come to find out, it wasn't just a plate, a tectonic movement. It was a nuclear movement. They record differently. And then we find out all the backstory to what went on. And their plan was that there's still two missing nukes. Their plan was to detonate these nukes above the United States, causing an EMP. And it's believed that 90% of Americans would be dead inside of 2 years if they shut the electric off. 90%. And those aren't my numbers. Those are the government's numbers on what they would expect to have happen should we have an EMP. If the grid is not turned back on, in 2 years, 90% population reduction. So
yeah, that sounds about right. We had a power cut here last year, and it lasted for like 9 hours. You know, like 9 hours without electricity, you actually start to realize how totally dependent you are on it, like utterly dependent. Oh, let's have a coffee. Oh, Frank, the power's out. Oh, I can't see anything. Let's turn a light. Oh, Frank, the power's out. Oh, I'm bored. I need to watch something. Oh, the power's out. I want to communicate with somebody. Oh, the power's out. See? Society stops dead in its tracks. And I mean the word dead literally when the power disappears. That's it. So I completely agree with what you're saying.
We were without power several times here. Let's see. First, we had Hurricane Irene, which put the power out here for about 5 or 6 days. And then we had, shortly after that, a freak snowstorm, which took down. It was early October. There's still leaves on the trees here. And it took down tons of trees around here, power lines. We were without electricity for 8 days. And then we got hit with Hurricane Sandy last November. And I've lived in the Northeast of America for most of my life. And I have never in my life ever seen a hurricane that's come up the East Coast of the United States in the autumn of the year and make a left-hand turn and go right through a cold front. It's just never, ever, ever happened before in anyone's memory.
Well,
even
if you have a look at
meteorologists.
During the satellite imagery of that, some people exposed that there was an enormous quantity of chemtrailing activity along one side of the front. And what they were doing is they were heating up the atmosphere, and that was pushing it up the coast. They actually literally weather controlled and forced it up the coast.
Oh, sure they did. As a matter of fact, they did that too with Hurricane Irene. Now, I just wanted to mention these little... So, these three events happened in 2 years. Now, the first one for 4 days, that was Hurricane Irene. You know, it's interesting. And that was a HAARP event. For anybody who doesn't know what HAARP is, go look it up on Google. H-A-A-R-P. Look it up. Anyway, HAARP is used to control the weather, among other things, and it controls Hurricane Irene, brought it right over as it dumped tons of rain. There were streams that couldn't turn around and put out a match. It became torrent river valleys and just tore up roads and stranded people for weeks. I'm glad I wasn't involved in that. But, you know, after the storm, I remember sitting outside. It was a beautiful morning. I mean, the temperature was like perfect. The birds were chirping. The sun was shining. It was like just the most beautiful day that you could. It was one of those days that you wish that every day of the year was like. And I was sitting there and I was mad at the world, angry. And I'm like, why am I so angry? And the electric was out, but that didn't bother me because I've been without electricity. My parents lived up in Maine for 5 years with no electricity. When I was a kid, my dad used to go up to Maine once a month and live with no electricity. once a year we would go up for the month of November. My dad liked to hunt, and so we went up there, stayed with an old timer who lived in a 150-year-old house, and he had no electricity. So you learn to deal with the outhouse, and you learn to deal with heating up the water, and you learn to deal with taking a bath in a bucket. And that's just the way it is. You know, when you don't have electricity, you learn to cope without. You learn how to cook your food on a wood stove. And when the electricity went out here, though, I saw where the chinks of the armor were on the four-day trip around. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. When I realized something, being all upset and all bent out of shape there, being all angry at the world, something dawned on me. I was like, why am I so angry? And then I thought, ha, HAARP. HAARP. I've been hit with HAARP for the last 12 hours. No wonder I'm so pissed off at the world. And, you know, as soon as I realized that, I felt much better. Interesting. So, you know,
it's like mind control. You know that you're under mind control if you never question that you're under mind control. But as soon and I think that's kind of like the same phenomenon. I'm so angry. Why am I? Oh, I'm being mind controlled. And all of a sudden the mind control disappears, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you see, you have to become aware of it.
Yeah.
And once you're aware of it, it goes away. And see, that's one of the things that's very important, that your listeners should continue to listen to shows like this. And if you know nothing about Letters to Earth, You Can Survive Armageddon, go buy it. Because in it, I explain where we came from, why we are here, why things are so screwed up, and what our future is. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss the future. It's going to be fun. It really is.
I already find what's going on now to be quite fun. I guess it's because maybe I was raised on violent video games and what have you, and I love the idea of being the good guy going into battle against hordes of crazed zombies and stuff like that. So, you know, I fit right into this current reality.
You ever see the movie Mars Attacks?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How did they defeat the Martians?
With country music.
With words. With words. Yeah, I know how to make their heads explode.
Yeah.
And it ain't by yodeling. Well, their heads... there you go. You know, Boy, I wish I could do that. If I started to do that, you'd shut down the show because of static. Give me a bushel basket. I might be able to carry a tune then. But yeah, it's with words. It's with words. And where do you find those words? Guess where? Within the scriptures themselves.
Yeah, I've interviewed a number of people who talk about the power of the word Jesus, you know, and it's quite interesting because I've found that as well. Even if I don't 100% go into all of the Christian structure and belief structure and what have you personally, I've noticed that whenever I'm actually in a bad place, I can just say that word and I actually just feel better, you know.
Remember that. Remember that. It's interesting. You know, the King James Version of the Bible removed the name Yahweh or Jehovah over 7,000 times if it was put back correctly. And it would be good if you want to actually learn what's going on, go find a good modern Bible where they have replaced God's name because it's important. Because you get to a place like Acts, the second chapter, in the 21st verse, it says, all those calling on the name of Yahweh, or in English, Jehovah, shall be saved.
Yeah.
And you see, the apostles, interestingly enough, came to Jesus complaining one day, hey, there's a guy in another town that's expelling demons by your name.
And then Jesus said, no way. And then his apostles said, Yahweh.
That's good. No, you know, but the apostles were all upset because, you know, he was commanding demons in the name of Jesus. And they were like, you know, what should we do? And Jesus said, hey, if he's not working against us, then they are working with us, aren't they? You know? So it just goes to show you. Now, I'm going to give you a modern-day application of that. Interestingly enough, just about the time I published Letters to Earth, I was just finishing up the book, I met this wonderful, marvelous woman, very brilliant, very intelligent. Never met her in person, actually. We met first on the internet and then on phone. Had an excellent conversation with her. She's Jewish. She's Russian. She's lived in Moscow, Tel Aviv, Paris, New York. She's a designer. She's an artist. She's also the great-great-grandniece of Tsar Nicholas, the last Tsar of Russia. It's interesting. The day before we actually made contact, she went to an Islamic holy man. And the Islamic holy man said, the man that you are seeking, you will find within the next day. And so she thought it was kind of a romantic encounter type thing, but it wasn't exactly that because I had just done all the research on her family history for the last 200 years. And it's very interesting. She related a story to me. Now, here's a Jewish woman born in Russia, lived in these major cities. Her parents practiced black magic on her from the time she was 12 years old with the reward of great wealth. And her grandmother actually understood why this was going on. One of their rituals included setting this woman on fire when she was a child. She's got scars on her stomach, but they're not, you know, like really disfigured from what I understand. I've never seen them. But she was plagued with demonic forces all of her life. And she said to me that she was essentially being held captive in the apartment that she was living in New York. Actually, I'm sorry, it was in New Jersey at the time, New York metropolitan area, just across the river. She was fighting. One day she was actually fighting these two shadow figures who were attacking her and forcing her down to her couch. And she said she just couldn't. She didn't know what exactly they wanted to do with her, but she just had all to do within her strength to fight them, and she was losing. And in desperation, she yells out the name Jesus Christ, and they vanished. The next day she went to a church. She actually started studying with Jehovah's Witnesses. Interesting.
Very interesting. And in fact, a lot of abductees, alien abductees, get that sleep paralysis thing on when the aliens are standing around their bed and they somehow manage to paralyze you. And allegedly, some people have been managed to, use the name of Jesus to make them go, and they disappear, kind of like they're allergic to it or something. Or at least some of them are. Some of them are. I've heard other stories as well that somebody has said Jesus, and they just laugh at them and just kidnap them and rape them with their anal probe. And we'll be right back after the break. AnthonyEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest is author Peter Kling. We'll be right back, folks.